Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, the 25th of November. I'm sure many of you have some of the day off at least to do some cooking and to drive or fly or take the train or bus to wherever you happen to be going for this Thanksgiving day. I think many of us feel that Thanksgiving is just the best holiday of the year, isn't it? It's great food and not the pressure of other holidays, particularly Christmas time, and it's just good. I've yet to make Aunt Margaret O'Leary's 24-hour salad, which I'll do this afternoon. I've made that salad for 30 years. And another year coming up, I guess I'll always make Aunt Margaret's salad and Mom's rice. The first hour of our program today, healthcare reform, and particularly we're going to focus on the pharmaceutical industry this hour of the show. We were going to have representatives from two pharmaceutical companies, large companies, but unfortunately, the first half hour of the program, GlaxoSmithKline turned down our request for an interview, stating they did not want to be put in a position to speak for the entire industry, so they won't be with us. But later on this half hour, the senior director of science policy for Pfizer will join us, who happens to have a Wisconsin tie, as many of our guests do, getting his PhD at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So I thought what we'd do the first half hour of the show is open phone lines to find out where you stand on healthcare. I'm just going to listen to you for a half hour. We've done oodles of programs on healthcare reform and looking at healthcare in other parts of the world. So it just seems like a good time to talk about what you want. We'll just take as many phone calls as we can, and then we'll look at the pharmaceutical industry to talk about what role they are playing in healthcare reform. Of course, you'll remember the news that came out, I think it was last week, that they raised their prices on drugs pretty significantly in advance of healthcare reform. So we'll talk certainly with our guest about that. Here's our phone number. Join the conversation right away. We have one line open. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. And we can also do an email, I believe. So that address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Starting our calls with David from Appleton. Hi, David.
Yeah, hi. I guess my question, one of many questions, is why are people opposed to health care reform? What are they afraid of? You know, isn't the mark of a civilized society that that all of our citizens have access to quality health care? I'm just flabbergasted by the whole, that it's even a debate. And I'm also confused about how it's become a Republican-Democrat issue. And, you know, as someone who has access to government health care, my family does, it's fabulous, and I don't know why that's not available for all citizens.
So you would be in favor of a government kind of plan that federal employees have for everybody?
Yeah, why not?
All right, and what do you think? Are we going to get some kind of reform before Christmas?
No, it won't happen.
You don't think
so? What I'm afraid of at this point, if it is, it will be so watered down and so full of add-ons and other things that it will make it, I'm afraid of what, you know, it'll be like Frankenstein's monster. I'm afraid of what it will come out to be. And one other just comment, you know, as you have, like, this pharmaceutical rep on, I'm curious if anyone's asked who will be the losers if there is health care reform. Is it the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry? And what do they stand to lose monetarily?
Okay, that's
and
a good question.
Is that why they're opposed to it?
Okay, I will ask that question. Who will be losers if there is reform?
Yeah.
Thank you. I like your question, David. Thanks for your call. Barb is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you so much for this program, especially the pharmaceutical part. I haven't heard anything in any of these programs addressing medication. Everything has been hospitalization or doctors, which is important, but I take asthma medication, and it's not covered. It's a Tier 3 brand or whatever. And I think the insurance companies also are milking Medicare. I went to a program, and the rep said that Medicare pays for this Advantage program $600 per person per month. Now, not everyone is using the insurance. So, I agree with David. I think the government can run health program, the VA, the federal insurance, and, you know, what Congress is getting. I don't think this is a political question. I think this is a democratic question, you know, going back to the Bill of Rights, that, you know, everyone has the right to be healthy and safe, and we take care of our people. I buy my drugs from Canada.
Hmm. And your insurance does not cover any kind of asthma medication?
No.
Really?
And asthma, without the medication, it's life-threatening.
Yes, I know.
But in every, I've been going online to all of these insurance companies, including Medco, and it says not covered. It's a tier three. It's $400 a month.
Oh, my gosh.
For my medications, and I can't afford that. So I go to Canada. Something that costs $136 here costs me $30 there.
So instead of $400 a month here, what are you paying to get your drugs from Canada?
About $200, maybe $250. I haven't gotten all of them. There's some where I'm now taking over the counter instead of the prescription I'm supposed to take because I just can't afford it.
It's still a significant amount of money, $250 for asthma medication.
Yeah, and some I try and get samples from my physician.
Right.
You know, asthma is life-threatening. I think it's more life-threatening than diabetes. I mean, I can die within a half hour if I don't have the proper medication.
Yeah. Thank you, Barb, for your call.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, we'll talk about that with our guest from Pfizer coming up later this hour, Scott Green Bay. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. I wish we could talk about trying to make something a bit more universal. I don't like the fact that, you know, supposedly about 30 million are going to be covered. I think what we need is at least to start with some form of catastrophic coverage for everybody in the United States. That's why nobody loses their house, goes bankrupt because they're ill. I think that should be the minimal amount provided to everybody. And then we start from there and trying to figure out how we can do this as least expensive as possible, because catastrophic coverage is very inexpensive. I'd like to find out where we don't do something like that. I'd also like to take it out of the partisanship. I mean, I was watching one of the news programs, and they said that health insurance was going to be covered by a fat cat tax. And you want to talk about trying to be divisive. Let's try and somebody else pay for it to make me feel good about it. I mean, I think we all need to participate in this system somehow, and I think we need to start somewhere where everybody has some form of insurance. And then the next time you have a program, and you may have already asked this, what's it going to cost the recipients? I haven't really heard that yet. The $30 million that it's supposedly going to insure, is that free insurance? I'm wondering what the recipients are going to be charged, and how do we know it's actually saving money?
I don't think we know that yet because we don't have a bill. But we will know that eventually.
But they have an estimate as how much it's going to cost. I'm sure they must have an estimate as what it's going to cost the recipient.
Mm-hmm.
And there's got to be some. You don't build a plan and then say, oh, by the way, this is going to cost you $6,000 a year. They've got to have an idea what it's going to cost a recipient. And I've never heard anybody talk about that yet.
Okay. Thanks, Scott, very much for the call. And it would make a difference. I think there are all kinds of different cost mechanisms in the Senate bill. The House bill would look more at taxing high-income earners. The Senate bill, it's my understanding, would tax high premium or high Cadillac of healthcare plans, but there are also other ways that it would be funded through the Senate bill. So it's a good idea. We will do a show on how it will affect individual people sometime in the future. Let me tell you, we're on the story. Charlie from Fitchburg is next. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually went to Washington a few weeks back for a single payer rally.
Oh, you did?
And really think that ultimately that's what we're going to have to do, get some handle on the increasing cost of health care. One of the things that's really sort of ridiculous is that over the past, say, 20 years, going back to about 1980, the number of doctors in this country has increased about, it's about doubled. the number of administrators involved with healthcare has gone up by over 2,500%. The number of people basically just pushing paper and not providing anything in the way of real healthcare has gone up 25 times over that period. And my brother, who's a family practice doc in Portland, Oregon, said that the number of people that he's got that have to handle insurance claims has had 1.3 people per doctor in their practice 20 years ago, and it's now 5.3. So much of the cost of health care at this point is really not going to provide health care, and I think that has to be addressed. One of the other things I think that's really important is that there's this mantra that people keep saying, well, if the government gets involved with our health care, quality of health care is going down. In fact, I think as some other callers have pointed out, things like the VA has some of the best health care in the world, and they did a survey of people on Medicare. Over 200,000 people participated in the survey. 59% of them rated the quality of the Medicare patients, rated their care as a 9 or a 10 out of a possible 10, where 10 represents the best possible outcome. Only 36% of people on private insurance gave their coverage a 9 or a 10. So the actual real world is the total opposite of the typical political rhetoric out there saying government can't provide quality health care.
Thank you, Charlie, for your call. And we do have it on our list. Our next program, I think, on health care reform will be on the VA system. So thank you for your call. We're of like minds here. Craig from Pewaukee. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Kathleen.
Hi, Craig.
Speaking towards the divisiveness that Scott was talking about in Green Bay, if you take it a little step further, what's to say whatever program we enact won't be dismantled in 3 years or 7 years by the next incoming regime? Thanks.
All right. Thanks for your call. Elizabeth from Fish Creek. Hi.
Hi there. I am concerned about patent law and the entire system of the way that we regulate medicine. And I have a really good example, which is the use of a plant for malaria that's been used for thousands of years. And a few years back, somebody noticed that it's been effective for thousands of years. The original studies that were done in the lab showed how effective it is. It's artemisinin is a key compound, but it's made from a whole plant called Sweet Annie, and you blend it with another whole plant that's high in iron, say dandelion leaf. All of the original studies that showed its efficacy used those whole plants. But our patent laws say that you have to make a single compound. So they got a single compound. And when we do that, we tend to see a resistance to that drug. So now something that's been useful for thousands of years has been turned into a drug that's a single compound. And now malaria is becoming resistant to it in just a few years. And the fact is that our whole system is designed to respect drugs that are run through a particular system, whereas we could actually make that same medicine out of our backyard. Honestly, it's a water extract or water alcohol. You can make them in our kitchen. And if you think of how much that costs people to make something that then, because it's not really made well and it's not made from a whole plant, it becomes out of date very quickly. The whole system seems like a big mess to me, and it seems like reform of the way that we recognize the validity of medicine is a problem, in addition to the patent law that drives it drives the system more than science does.
All right, thanks, Elizabeth. We're talking this hour about healthcare reform. We had hoped to have people from two different pharmaceutical companies. GlaxoSmithKline declined once again our request for an interview. We will be speaking with the Senior Director of Science Policy from Pfizer, and he will be with us at about 9:30. So we thought we would just, because we've done so many programs on healthcare reform, find out what your thoughts are about the Senate bill, the House bill, whether or not you have hope that there will be some kind of reform, whether you don't want any kind of reform. We're just opening this up to you for the first half hour of our program today. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655, the number. Scott from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Everyone knows that there's problems with our insurance, pre-existing conditions and everything else, but I have a whole problem with what's going on in Washington. It just seems like the whole system is all about getting the votes. It's kind of like ARP was originally against this plan because it had so many Medicare cuts, and I've heard that basically they were given rights when they started giving up so much grief to an exclusivity for an insurance that they'll sell for, that will be worth millions for them, and all of a sudden ARP's not making any noise anymore. And I really think that, you know, the senators and all the congressmen, if this is going to be a great plan, they have to get off their plans and basically get on board and say, okay, this is our plan too. It's kind of like, this is what we're going to make for the people. And, you know, so we do horse trading and we'll do this and this for this vote and do this and this for that vote. And by the time it's all done, nobody's getting served. And the senators and the congressmen are still basically with their plans that nobody else gets.
What do you want, Scott? Their plan?
I want basically something that addresses the heads of everything, where basically it's, you know, pre-existing conditions and, you know, lifetime limits and all that. But when you go in and you do this thing wholesale, nothing that has ever been done wholesale with all the horse trading that's gone on in Washington has ever come out good. It's always basically, okay, well, yeah, that's a problem. Well, that's a problem. I mean, just look at the problems that are they're coming down with, you know, how many times women should go in and get a mammogram. It really is one of those things that there's a lot of devil in the detail, and nobody cares about it. All they care about is, let's get this through, and we'll figure out what happens on the end. Well, if the congressmen and the senators had to get this program, they might be a little more, detail-oriented, I can't think of the word, where the senator themselves will go, this isn't right. My wife shouldn't be doing this. This isn't right. I don't want my son to be doing this. They don't care that much about the detail. All they care about is getting the votes, and I can't take things that are rammed through like they are getting rammed through.
Thanks, Scott, very much for your call. Dave is next from Wanakee. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I just wanted to say I lived in France from 1995 to year 2000. The health care there was far superior to what I get here. Short example, I had what I was worried about, a stomach ulcer, and I made an appointment that week, went in for an endoscopy, which the gastroenterologist actually recommended against, but he saw I was worried, so he did it anyway. There wasn't any problem with it. There was the doctor was right. I didn't really need it, but I was able to get it. It was basically free, except for a very small fee.
Thank you, Dave, for the call. We did do a show on France, and it is considered, in terms of the measurement of longevity and infant mortality rates, considered one of the better systems in the world, a combination of public-private with a heavy emphasis on public. Thanks, Dave. Lucy from Marshfield. Hi.
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 Hi. I just wanted to say we were recently on vacation, and we had people from the UK and Canada both on our trip, and we, of course, were talking a lot about health care, and none of these people thought that they were getting terrible health care. One guy had cancer, and he still said he got the best care there was. So I don't think that our health care being based on some of these other countries is so out of line.
What do you think we should base it on, Lucy? What's your favorite?
Well, I do think that we should have, I think maybe a one-payer, something like Medicare for everybody. I will be on it completely in a short while, but I haven't been on it long enough to really know how it pays out. but I do know, I do work in the healthcare field, and our insurance is far less, people do not get, they have to pay so much out, even with insurance, that people can hardly go. I mean, a lot of people just won't even go to the clinic because they say, I can't afford it. So there's something wrong here. Even for having a baby, out-of-pocket costs is like $5,000, and yet we're working for the people on Medicaid, which I don't deny them the Medicaid, but they don't have to pay anything to have their baby. So our standards are not the same either.
Thanks, Lucy, for your call. Sharon from Sparta, hi.
I don't really know how I feel about it because I'm questioning why they can't, as you would do in any presentation, just have bullets and say, this is what it does, this is what it does, this is what it does. This is what the bill is all about, you know, line items. And it would include all of these hidden things that we are not seeing. So any presentation you would give those things. It's written in lawyer language. Our people that we have elected into office, many of them do not have that training to understand what's really being said. And I question why it can't be in language that all can understand. We're insulted by...
Oops, hello. Hello?
Yes, hello. This is Joseph Hammond.
Oh, okay. Hold on. I don't know how you got on this line. We'll be with you in one moment, Joseph. Thank you, Diane, very much for your call. And I think that it would be hard to make a bullet presentation because these bills are very complicated. 2,074 pages in the Senate bill. I'm not sure how many in the House bill, but Diane make, or our guest makes, Sharon, it was an interesting point that it could be a whole lot less complicated. All right, we're going to continue our conversation. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. And I know that you're going to have a lot of questions for our next guest. We are thankful that he has joined our program today. We're going to be looking at the pharmaceutical industry and their role in healthcare reform and perhaps their role in increasing prices over the years in healthcare reform. We'll ask Dr. Joe Hamming about this hour. He is the senior director of science policy for Pfizer. He has a PhD from UW-Madison in neuroscience, Department of Veterinary Science, also studied zoology at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh, so he has strong Wisconsin ties. We'll be looking at the pharmaceutical industry and welcoming phone calls for him. Our number for your phone calls is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. For you to join this conversation. Dr. Hamming, thank you so much for being with us. We're trying to get him on the right line here. Dr. Hamming? Oh, I'm not sure. He must have called into another line. All right, we'll try to get him online and continue with your phone calls. I heard him somehow get through, so we'll get with him in just one moment. Diane from Antioch, thanks very much for calling. Hi.
Hi, it's Diane. Kathleen, I just have one question, and I guess it's kind of, what's the real timeline on these bills? When do things go into effect? And, you know, how, I understand that it's going to be a few years before actually it's the, you know, some of the things will be available to people, but what about the different changes that they're going to be making? Will they go in effect immediately, like, you know, the uninsured and the, you know, the limits and things like that?
I don't know that either, Diane. And it seems to me if there are changes that are significant, who cares? Get it happening earlier. 2013, 2014 seems a long way down the road, doesn't it?
But I keep hearing, and I'm just thinking,
I do too.
You know, I'll be on that. I will be, you know, on Medicare by then. And I'm, you know, I'm 60, and I'm sitting here going, you know, I'd like to retire at 62, but how do I do that? You know, how can I? And I had cancer 5 years ago, and it's in remission. So I have pre-existing. So how do I do that?
Right.
And it sounds to me like the bill won't do anything for me until, you know, I can, you know, legally go ahead and go on Medicare. So
right.
But I mean, there's got to be a lot of other people like this, especially all of baby boomers.
Oh, well, yes, indeed. All right. Well, we'll talk about that the next time we look at the bill.
I would love to hear that at some point when you have one of your people on.
Okay.
And I listen to you every morning on my way to work.
Thanks, Diane.
until you fade away when I get into Chicago.
Yes. Okay. Thanks, Diane.
Thanks.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Now we have Dr. Hamming with us. Dr. Hamming, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Well, we're happy to have you here. So what do you think about healthcare reform? What do you think we need?
Well, you know, Pfizer and our entire industry has outlined, you know, principles that will provide a solid foundation for achieving patient-centered healthcare reform, and that's really what we're most concerned with. That's my concern. I think that much of what we're talking about has been largely around insurance reform. That's the major part of what we're hearing about: access to better healthcare, access to better medicines. The reform we think we should see in this country. It would provide more predictable and more affordable access to health care, improving health and encouraging adherence to the medicines and the therapies that physicians prescribe, and protecting and rewarding medical innovation because it'll lead to new therapies. That's really important. And then strengthening Medicare prescription benefit and Medicaid, and supporting, you know, reasonable pathways for approving new biologic drugs, for instance, some of the really important therapies that we're seeing for diseases like cancer.
Mm-hmm. And what role does the pharmaceutical industry play in all of this?
Well, we feel that the pharmaceutical industry, the biotechnology industry, have a huge role to play in bringing new medicines to the marketplace. The drugs that and medicines that we produce are one of the most important tools that doctors have to providing better outcomes for patients. Whether it's drugs to lower blood pressure or cholesterol, or drugs to treat cancer, these are all very, very important. But there's so much more that needs to be done, and I think that's one of the pieces that is most concerning to our industry, and certainly to me, is that there is so much medical need. We have so much of, there's so much of a concentration on providing access to patients who need drugs today, and that's really important. And we can talk about that more. I'm not looking past that whatsoever. However, what we do have to keep in mind is these unmet needs. When you think of the incredible burden to society and on patients for Alzheimer's disease, and we're just at the very, very beginning of understanding that and that disease and the neurodegenerative diseases. And the money that is going to need to be put into that from the federal government and governments across the world, as well as the industry, are going to be massive investments. And again, just at the very beginning. The advancements we're making in cancer are very, very they're very exciting, but still we're nowhere near being able to understand everything we need to understand and developing medicines that will actually affect cures for many cancers. Again, we've made huge advances across medicine, and we play a part in that, but there's so much more that needs
to
be done.
Let's address, you didn't have a chance to hear our first half hour, but we were talking about what our listeners would like to see in terms of health care reform. A woman called who has asthma, pretty severe, needs medications that cost about $400 a month, which is a lot of money for anybody. Her insurance company does not cover prescription drugs at all. She gets her medicine from Canada because she can get them, she said, at almost half price. A couple questions here. One is, how can healthcare reform address people who really do have huge prescription drug needs and can't afford them? And why is there such a disparity in cost between how much they cost in the United States and how much they would cost in Canada?
Well, that is an incredibly important question, and one that we are we have taken very seriously and have addressed for patients just like the caller that you mentioned. First and foremost, access programs from the government in expanding Medicare and providing prescription assistance to folks who don't have insurance is vitally important, and we, the entire industry, have programs. We at Pfizer have patient assistance programs to help people who need those medicines. So that's a start. We need cooperation and help from governments here and abroad to be able to address those issues. Now, as far as the cost of prescription medicines in the United States, Americans are angry that they have to pay this increasing share of the cost of research and development from new medicines. We understand that. And it's true that the cost of development is increasingly borne by Americans. But this is a larger, trade issue, an international trade issue. We are foreign governments, especially those with no foreign with no form of a biopharmaceutical industry. They continue to put pressure on the system through government price control, something that we don't do here. So as they refuse to pay for the real cost of producing medicines, that burden is placed on Americans. So if this problem, though, were posed to the average American, and I speak to a lot of folks out in the field, and if it were put with all the proper context, and this is, as you are aware, it's a very complicated issue, I believe that the vast majority of folks that we would talk to agree that we have the responsibility here in the United States to continue to innovate by developing new medicines. We again, to just go back to that point I made earlier, we're always talking about providing access to, you know, to the medicines that are that we have today, but the reality is going to hit that we don't address diseases with massive impacts like cancer, like neurodegenerative diseases, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, diabetes, and these sorts of, you know, large issues. And it's going to be an innovative product, the innovative products that come out of the biopharmaceutical industry that is going to address those medical needs. And so the issue is very complicated, but we understand the desire to have these products. We understand the critical need to have these products, and we're doing our part to make sure that people have access. But again, we need help with the federal government and through various programs to make sure that people have the access that they need.
Yeah. Well, I have no doubt that drugs are keeping me alive. I need drugs for my heart, and by golly, I'm glad they're there and that I have good health insurance because I work for the state. So I'm thankful when we think of all the things we're thankful for the day before Thanksgiving that I have all of that in my life. But I really can feel for people who don't have very much money and who need prescription drugs, and I'm sure you do as well, that they are entitled to them as much as I am, as much as anybody is.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Well, you know, for those of us who work in the industry and that work on developing products like this, it is not a comfortable feeling that everyone doesn't have access to these drugs and to these life-saving therapies. It is not what people go into this business in researching and all of the issues that go into all of the facets that go into the industry. We don't do this so that some people can't have access. But again, we can't do it completely on our own. And we are a for-profit industry. That's the way drug development works. It is not perfect, but it is the system that brings new medicines to the marketplace. And if we're not able to continue to invest, then the new therapies don't come along.
Let's talk about this profit for a moment before we go to phone calls. As you well know, there was a story that I think it was last week developed that said that a new AARP analysis had found that drug companies raised their prices for prescription drugs by 9.3% over the last year, amounting to $10 billion in new revenue, this in anticipation of health care reform. How do you respond to that?
Well, any increase that we're seeing in the cost of prescription medicines is directly tied to our need and the desire that we have to fund research and development. It's as simple as that. The loss of exclusivity on our innovative patented medicines, these large increases that we're seeing in the utilization of generic medicines, which again is great for many patients and consumers, the availability of good generic medicines. All of those things put the kinds of pressure on us to be able to, you know, continue to invest in R&D. And that's what we're doing. That's why we're seeing those increases, because of those pressures. It is for no other reason.
Let's go to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Dr. Joe Hemming is our guest, Senior Director of Science Policy for Pfizer, and we'll be welcoming calls for you momentarily, actually. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dr. Joseph Hemming is our guest, Senior Director of Science Policy for Pfizer. We do want to remind you again that we had a request into GlaxoSmithKline, so we would have two pharmaceutical companies. We did ask them to our healthcare forum as well and found out that they weren't going to be attending until hours before the event, they indicated that they would be a part of this show, but then decided not to participate because they didn't want to be put in a position to speak for the entire industry. So we thank Dr. Hamming from Pfizer for being with us this hour, because the questions, I'm sure, are going to be tough here from you. We go to phone calls now. Dale from Green Bay is our first caller. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how's it going, Kathleen?
All right, Dale, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Great.
I just had a question for the doctor as far as the prescription drug industry goes. I've been keeping track of the health care reform bills that have been going through the House and through the Senate pretty closely due to the fact that I'm in the industry myself as an insurance agent. And I was just currently wondering what the doctor thinks is going to happen specifically to his industry with the current bills that are going through the House.
Well, that's a great question. And certainly it's way too early to make any predictions about, you know, what we're going to see. I think that there's no question that we're going to be providing upfront savings to the system in the tune of about $80 billion. That is the number that was agreed to with the administration and with between our trade organization. So that is $80 billion over 10 years. That is not going to go into development of new products. It's way too early to tell. We believe that we'll continue to invest. We're continuing to work on the needs, those medical needs that are the greatest for patients. We believe that people will continue to want and to need the medicines that we develop. So we're optimistic. We're very optimistic. But it's going to be a changed world, and we have to wait and see before we'll know exactly what the future will bring.
Thanks, Dale. Joe from Delafield. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Whoa, Joe, are you there? There you go.
Question for your guest that we're only one of two industrialized countries that allow advertising for drugs, and I'd like to know how much your budget is for advertising and such. Compared to research, I understand it's advertising is actually a higher budget than research.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not true at all. The fact is there's a report from the Government Accountability Office, which we can provide, that shows that it's quite different from that. Pfizer invests, now this is prior to our purchase of Wyeth Pharmaceuticals, invests about $7.5 billion in research and development. To put that into perspective, the National Institutes of Health total budget is about $29.5 billion. Our direct-to-consumer marketing programs, that's print and advertising and television, is well under $1 billion. Which is, again, a far cry from the $7.5 billion. Those are often cited figures. And again, it often comes from many in the public who have not researched this as carefully as they need to, do not understand all of the business-related expenses that go into developing medicines, just like any other product. We are not immune to those sorts of costs and pressures. So our R&D is vastly greater than our marketing costs.
Can you please tell me, just because they're all over the place, why are there so many ads for erectile dysfunction?
Well, I think that you'll see that these ads have changed considerably over time, and I think I don't know the exact figures about where the numbers have gone, but from the onset of these the marketing of these products. But they meet a very important medical need in this world. I talked to a number of different groups, from doctors to pharmacists to senior citizens, and I'm never I never speak without having someone coming up to me and telling me a story about how important one of the erectile dysfunction drugs are, whether it's Cialis or Viagra or any of these products. They tell me about how they went to their doctor, they finally got the courage to go to their doctor to have this conversation about these about this problem. And they find out that they have underlying high blood pressure or other problem that causes that is the leading cause to the erectile dysfunction. And you know, I think it's really important to keep a lot of those sorts of things in perspective because these are important products. And again, I think that it's the advertising that is done because there is a factor that men may not feel comfortable going to talk to their doctor about something like this, but it allows men to gain the courage, if you will, to have that all important conversation with the doctor. In general terms, when I think about direct-to-consumer marketing, advertising our medicines provides information that is FDA-regulated, that is absolutely spot-on, and is agreed to with our regulators to provide the kind of information that a doctor and a patient need. And I believe that more information rather than less information is better for patients and for consumers than no information.
Thanks, Joe, for your call. We go to Peter from Stoughton. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. I guess I'd like to go back a little bit to the part of the conversation that you started things with, Kathleen. What good does it do to develop specific high-end pharmaceutical medication if no one can afford it? Porsche makes some excellent automobiles, and I'd really love to have any number of them. But I won't be in a position to afford a Porsche anytime soon, and I need some basic transportation. And there are a lot of people who can't even afford the basic transportation that is provided by some medications.
Well, that's a great question, and I'm very pleased that you've asked it. And it's really simple. It's very simple. Again, over 70% of prescriptions written today are generics. The drug is an example. Our drug Lipitor to lower cholesterol is a marketed product. It is still on patent, and in 2 years that drug is going to be off patent and will be a generic drug. It is seen as the Porsche, if you will, of medicines today. As it becomes available as a generic, it is going to be at a price for that from that point forward. It is going to be available at a generic price. Now, the reason why it is so important for us to continue to develop new products is that again there are so many diseases and maladies that people suffer from where there is no treatment. I don't think that we can, as an American, as someone who's has a great deal of interest in these innovative new products, I don't think we can stop. Anybody would argue that we'd stop innovating and bringing these new therapies to the market because of cost. We believe in getting these products to the people who need them, but again, if they're very expensive, We've got to think about the impact to the whole healthcare system, not just the cost of the medicines. Cost of a medicine is the cost of medicines in our healthcare system is 10 or 11 cents on the healthcare dollar, and what doesn't enter the debate is the fact that lowering blood pressure, lowering cholesterol, treating diabetes, and ultimately someday treating Alzheimer's disease, so that people don't get institutionalized in nursing homes and cost families tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars a year is going to be a very, very important step in the healthcare system. So we really need to keep that into perspective when we think about the overall cost of medicines as its portion of the healthcare dollar.
Thanks,
Peter. We think there's a huge value there.
Andrea from Green Bay, hi.
Good morning. Kathleen, first let me say I love your show, and I am so thankful that you have a doctor on. I do work in the industry as well. And the gentleman that called before, as far as the whole likeness to the Porsche, I think that that's so accurate, and that's exactly what I was going to say is, you know, we're so ready to bail out the automotive industry, but that doesn't mean everybody's going to get a Cadillac. And one other perspective I'd like to say is, as the doctor mentioned, it is a for-profit industry, and I understand completely that people need their medicines. I mean, that's part of what my job is as well, is to make sure that they get the correct ones to take care of whatever they need them for. But my company pays a lot of wages throughout the entire nation, especially in the state of Wisconsin, as well as taxes. I mean, so it is a crucial part of our economy that we remain solvent. So I just wanted to give you that perspective as well.
Thanks, Andrea. You want to respond to that, Dr. Hammond?
Andrea puts that very, very well. It's exactly the case. We are we're not looking for a bailout in this industry. We are looking to continue to innovate, and that's really important to everyone who's in this industry.
We had somebody ask, and take this where you want, but I think it's interesting. When you look at both the Senate and the House bill, they would both have some kinds of significant reform, and who knows where healthcare would be 10 years from now if these bills, portions of them, were passed. What do you think about, somebody asked, who loses if there is reform? Do you see big losers here or not?
Well, as you know, we have 300 million Americans. And I think that we can all agree that there's a need and there's room for improvement in this in all parts of it, in the way that patients are treated, the way that the uninsured are taken care of when they're out of work. The way that we get access to the best therapies to all Americans. So that should be a goal. I mean, that's certainly it's hard to refute any of those goals, and that's where we come out. So if we can get this right, and we continue to invest as a nation in new therapies, and I'm not talking about just drugs, but devices and cell transplant therapies and better imaging, so that we can understand Alzheimer's disease and how those drugs are going to work. All of those things are going to be up for debate as we go forward. And remember, the healthcare reform now is largely set around dealing with insurance and access and things like that. There's much, much more that's going to need to come. All of the work around comparative effectiveness and our ability to decide whether a therapy is worth its weight or not. Those sorts of things are going to come later. But I think we're poised to do some great things here, and my company is right there at the forefront. And we believe that we have a very important role to play here. So we want this to be a win.
One more phone call. We have about a minute left, everybody. Mike from Appleton, hi.
Yeah, good morning. I've been dying to ask this question of a representative of this, let's call it the pharmaceutical health industry. And the question is as follows. Why is it that a group of obviously highly intelligent people who run these companies have not had in their business plan 20 years ago the thought and the realization that at some point in time, the government was going to step in because there were too many people who were uninsured? Why is it that you didn't calculate that and say, okay, let's all take a portion of our profits and offer plans so that everybody's covered and keep control?
All right, we have about 30 seconds.
Well, believe me, we have, our leadership understands that very, very well and has understood that. But we can't do it alone. We're one company, we're one industry, we're 10% of the healthcare system. And we'll do our part. But we need to do that in concert with the rest of the healthcare system, insurers, with doctors, with major medical centers, with device makers, you know, and most important, with our government. So we have instituted, as I said up front, go to Pfizer.com and you'll find out about the industry-wide and the specific programs we have to get access, to provide access to patients for some of the most important therapies that that they can get, and that is our product.
Dr. Hemming, we have to go at this point. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Dr. Joseph Hemming, Senior Director of Science Policy for Pfizer. We continue our healthcare reform series. We will be very shortly looking at the VA system, and we'll let you know when that's going to happen. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, John Treader for on-air production here in Milwaukee, and thanks for all of your calls. This is the Ideas Network.